The Wonder Technique is an acronym that helps people remember the core principles of health and well-being. And I'm a person who likes to simplify, and I wanted to create an acronym. So what does Wonder stand for? W is for water, O is for outside activity, N is for no worries, happy state of mind, D is for delicious, nutritious foods, E is for exercise, and O is for rest, which includes sleep. Very simple, very much to the point. Self-care. And if you think about it each day in the morning, what do I need to do to take care of my health and well-being?
Welcome to the Permission to Heal podcast. I am Marcy Brockman. Together, we will discover what brings us healing, meaning, and true joy. You only need your own permission to begin. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Permission to Heal. I am Marcy Brockman, and I am really thrilled that you are here today. Today, we have David Hennessy at the podcast. He was previously on episode 25 during season one, and we had such a wonderful conversation about healing and about self-care and self-regulation that we both wanted to do it again. So he is here today. David created a holistic personal development program called the Wonder Technique that has continued to evolve over many years. He has presented the Wonder Technique in hundreds of workshops and seminars, and his formal training in psychology and nutrition has really informed all of his research. He has traveled to over 20 countries and lived in three long-term. He is at least bilingual, if not trilingual. And his goal, his mission, is to give the fundamental tools of personal development and regulation and management to everyone on the planet. He is passionate about simplifying the ability for people to live happy, healthy lives. And he also loves hiking and rock climbing. We talked about everything. We talked about self-care and self-regulation. We talked about the Wonder Technique and how to apply it. We talked about forgiveness of oneself and of others and relentless self-compassion and compassion for others and why all of this is important, not only as tools for our own personal growth, but as tools to be better parents and to be better friends and spouses and neighbors and family members. And we just had a lovely, lovely conversation. We talked about a couple of books that you can find in the Permission to Heal podcast bookshop on bookshop.org, as well as all of the books of all of my past, present, and future guests. And then when you order them from the Permission to Heal bookshop on bookshop.org, they get sourced from local and independent bookshops and not gigantically large multinational corporations, which is always a good thing. So please join me in welcoming David Hennessy to Permission to Heal. Thanks so much. When my own healing journey began, after my divorce and my mother's death, art and creativity were there to help me process decades of trauma and pain, and through art, painting and writing, I found my authentic self. I wrote my book, Permission to Land, Searching for Love, Home, and Belonging, as a way to share my healing journey with the world. I found my way out of the darkness of mental illness and addiction into the light of a healthy life I intentionally created for myself and my children, ending the intergenerationality of it all. To get your own personally signed hardcover or paperback copies of Permission to Land, Searching for Love, Home, and Belonging, and the companion journal book, Permission to Heal, Personal Transformation Through Writing, go to my website, marcybrockman.com, marcybrockmann.com, to help support my Permission to Heal podcast. Use the links in the show notes of this podcast episode. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, you only need your own permission to live your best life. How are you, David? I'm so excited that you're here again.
Oh, I am too, Marcy. I really appreciate being able to have the opportunity to come back on your show and receive your positive energy. It was such a good experience. And as we had a little chat before we started recording, I have great memories of the prior podcast, and I re-listened to it about a week ago, and I thought that was a great experience. So I was really excited to come back on your show.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I felt the same way. Yeah. You were a part of the first half of season one, I believe. And
yes.
And now you're here. This is, you know, season two, deep in the trenches, as they say. Yes. So you're in France, and I'm in New York. It's about 1 p.m. here. So what is it, about 7 or 8 by you?
It's just after 7. Just yeah, 6 hours difference. And it's currently unusually hot for this time of year. Yesterday it was 30 degrees Celsius, which we're talking, that must be in the 90s, which for me is not normal in France. No. So it looks like we might have a very hot summer. And I heard on Météo France 2 weeks ago, if for those people who want the international weather forecast, they said that they've had 37% less rain year over year in France.
Wow.
37%. I thought I'd misheard it, but no, it wasn't. And I'm like, and this is Météo France.
Drought conditions?
Pretty dry. Like today, I haven't seen rain in weeks. And today it tried to rain for, I'm not kidding, less than a minute. It was like the clouds just kind of had dropped a few. And I was like, oh, it's going to rain. No, it didn't rain. And when I look at that,
here,
of course.
You want some of ours?
Oh, you can send me some. I love the rain. I'm Irish. So I send me the rain, please.
I love winter days.
So yeah, it's very, I like the rain. So, but the French people, of course, most of them really love the sunshine. But I still hear them now start to say, wow, it's hot. Because in May, normally it should be, I think it's normally in the 20s, like low 20s Celsius. So like in the 70s, not in the 90s. Yeah. Like it's unusual. But I don't know if it'll get it. It was 114 degrees Fahrenheit, so 44 degrees Celsius. That's approximate for those people listening that can do the math on this. Mm-hmm. In 2019, and I was here in the same location. That was insanely hot. I'd never experienced that since I was in Pakistan. So, and yikes. Pakistan was hot.
Yeah. I think I heard yesterday that there's like a heat bubble. I don't know what the technical term of that is, over like the northeast portion, the New England portion of the United States and northeastern Canada.
Wow.
That it's unseasonably hot.
Yes.
Probably not the same air mass that's over France right now.
Yeah.
But I think, climate change is a thing. Science is real,
It is.
So we're going to keep feeling the effects of these things with unpredictable weather.
Yeah.
Unless we do something significant and severe about curtailing fossil fuel emissions. But it's not up to you and I,
Yeah.
We can only vote and spend our money in ethically conscious places and in ways that match our values and pray the people we vote for do the right thing.
Exactly.
That's kind of
The key to me, it's like really it all comes down to our own individual actions, own individual responsibilities, because mm-hmm. we take the power back when we do that, as you know, with your podcast, Permission to Heal, when we allow ourselves to heal, Marcy, when we allow ourselves to take responsibilities for the hard things going on mm-hmm. in our lives. And I was totally impressed with a friend of mine called me the other day to tell me that they've taken steps. I keep this as private as I can. So they had taken steps in their life to work by going to therapy to work on stuff.
Good.
And they'd made like within 7 months of deep action, they had changed. And they had, because we're frequently in contact and the joy was really there. And I told this friend, I said, I'm totally impressed because I'm really, really happy for this person. Like I'm trying to hide the information, but I'm really happy because not everybody will do that. But the thing is that they took responsibility and they went out to work on the stuff.
Yeah.
And
they're the only ones who can.
Exactly. And we can't change anybody around us. So many times I see the things in the world around me that I can't change. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned a little earlier, lost water in my home completely because someone else had done something to shut off the water that I didn't even know about. And there's nothing I couldn't control that. I just had to see how do I deal with it.
Right.
And that's how we grow through the process. So we do have problems and changes with the climate and that. So how do we work with that? We make our own individual decisions. And I remember somebody in the past, it could have been one of my parents, that said to me, clean up your own home first. Clean up your own doorstep. That's an old phrase. Don't tell other people to take care of their well-being if you're not working on it yourself. And then if everybody took care of their own business, what would it be like?
Right.
Sounds so simple.
The world would be better managed and cleaner.
Yeah.
To follow the same metaphor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
interesting. It's true. You got to start. What is it? Act locally and think globally or something. Yes, what is that phrase?
I think you've got it. You've got it exactly right. Yes. You do.
You really only have control over your own little perimeter, and you're the only one who can manage any of that. Really.
Yes. And that's very powerful.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really powerful for those people listening. Like for me, when I was younger, I used to defer decision-making to other people.
Me too.
And I look back on that, I forgive myself for doing it, but I regret doing it because I avoided making decisions that avoided me getting experiences that I would have learned from sooner in my life.
Right.
You know? And so now I'm willing to make decisions that are not always, I don't always know what's going to think is going to work out for sure, but I will learn from it. And then the key, as I hear from Ray Dalio, who wrote a book called Principles that I'm rereading, he said, the important thing is keep track of the decisions that you made that worked out to be good, positive results. So you don't keep on having to remake the same decision, but be aware of the right things. And then you actually take less.
Build on it.
Yeah, exactly. You take less bandwidth away for, oh, when I do this, it works out. So I'll keep doing this. And if it doesn't work out sometime, well, then I'll adjust it. But there's no need to change something if it's already working. Right. Well, why change it? Because there's plenty of other things that need, you know, fixing.
Adjustment. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So where do we begin? Last time you were here, we talked about your wonder technique a little bit and what the acronym stands for and how we put those ideas into practice. And maybe it bears going back to that to delve into that a little bit more deeply and then progress from there.
For sure. And in fact, I didn't explain the acronym in detail. And I'm going to do that today, Marcy, for sure.
Okay.
So for those people listening, I know people who attend workshops and seminars, they do usually as part of their participation, they get a little bookmark, which has the wonder technique on it. So if people want to make notes, this is my idea that I came up with in 1999, and they're welcome to make notes and on the idea, because the wonder technique is an acronym that helps people remember the core principles of health and well-being. And it came about, as I might have mentioned before on the prior podcast, by me trying to figure out ways to remember things in my own life after going through things, and also to in the history of my mom, working on health and well-being, helping support other people. But I had so much information bouncing around all over the place. I'm a person who likes to simplify, and I wanted to create an acronym. And really, I stumbled on it. I was messing around with piles of papers on the floor. I had information about drinking water. I had information about exercise. And I was looking for a sensible word that put it all together. So here it is, the wonder technique, W. And this is really simple. So people should be able to, you know, stop listening after 5 minutes here. I hope they don't, but stop after 5 minutes. And then they'll actually go, I remember this. So wonder, what does wonder stand for? W is for water. O is for outside activity. N is for no worries, you know, happy state of mind. D is for delicious, nutritious foods. E is for exercise. And O is for rest, which includes sleep. Very simple, very much to the point.
Self-care.
Self-care. And if you think about it each day in the morning, what do I need to do to take care of my health and well-being? And at the end of the day, you go, okay, did I drink some water? Did I get outside? You know, how did I think about things? What was I eating? Did I exercise myself, move my body? Doesn't mean you have to go to the gym. Did I really move myself? Have I taken the time to rest? And you can look in the morning, did I have a good night's sleep? You start to actually build habits around core principles that you know. Now, I can go really deep on each one of those concepts, but as long as you start to integrate them, because there's a lot of people, Marcy, that they work on one of those areas, they silo them out. Like they're really good at hydrating themselves, but they don't pay enough attention to the fact that they need to eat a certain balanced meal.
For me, it's rest. I'm so busy and so involved in so many things that I don't give myself enough opportunity to rest, which is why I get sick too much. So that has to be something that I prioritize. And what you're saying for the listeners really pieces together what I spoke to Dr. Stuart Shanker about on a previous episode about self-regulation and increasing our own brain's dopamine production, which helps us then self-regulate better and deal with stress.
Yes.
So the wonder technique are actual physically easy strategies to use to apply Dr. Shanker's anti-stress techniques in dopamine production and self-regulation. So if you're listening to multiple episodes, these two fit together very well.
Wonderful. I have not listened to that episode, but that is my goal.
Well, it hasn't dropped yet. I just interviewed him an hour ago. So
Okay, so then
so it will show up the week before yours shows up in season two. So
wonderful. And the key for the listeners is really that's what my goal was. I mean, I would do seminars, conferences, and people would walk away and they would remember Wonder. Like and it's
wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, all the stuff plays out, and it's a beautiful word. It's not some unusual acronym. Like I feel blessed that it came to me, and I've written about it many, many different times, but it's just such a simple way, because I mean, I can't repeat it more. You talk about hydration. I've got my bottle of water beside me. And how do you create the water habit? You make it available and you drink water throughout the day. That's it on a simple level. You can get more depth into it. But outside activity, you start your day taking some time in the fresh air. And if you do that, one of the things that's important for listeners to identify, Marcy, is that all of these things cross over. They all impact each other. If you're not properly hydrated, you won't sleep properly. If you don't sleep properly, you can't think clearly. If you're not sleeping enough, it'll impact how much food and what types of food you eat. And like everything is all intercorrelated for me, interactive. And going outside, I start the day always with a walk, and I get some fresh air. And therefore, I get expose myself to natural light. And that's really important too for psychological approach. And we talked about in the last podcast, a little synopsis for people. I always start the day by thinking about what I'm grateful for, and I write it down, and I end the day the same way. And that's practicing the no worries. This is what I'm framing my day. I'm framing as to what I want to see happen and what I'm grateful for. And for sure, when I write down at the end of the day today, I'll be grateful for this time we spent together. Like I'm happy for that. You. Thank you. And I'm reinforcing what I want to see happen, because the danger is you reinforce the wrong stuff, right?
Right.
Yeah. So exercise is an important one, because I sometimes on the seminars, when I share with people, they start thinking, oh, I've got to go to the gym, got to do that. I said, no, find something you love to do to move your body and call it exercise. Could be dance. For me, it can be rock climbing or hiking, things I love to do.
It could be cleaning your house. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. You're physically moving your body. And then then you can stretch it out a little bit, no pun intended. If you do a lot of people do some form of stretching or yoga or something, although yoga is not stretching, but you know what I mean? Like that's really important for us as we age on in time. And that actually yoga is probably really good for people who need to practice balance. Because by not only do we need to take time to make sure that our bodies are moving, but as we get older, people, it can be a fatal mistake not to have a good sense of balance, because you can fall and break a hip. Yeah. So throughout your life, and you want to make sure that it's a habit that you love to do. Like when it comes to exercise, it's got to be something you will do regardless of people telling you or not. Mm-hmm. That's really important. And I always share that with people. And then some people say, well, I'm limited. I can't necessarily do that. And say, well, hang on a second. Have you ever heard the story of Bruce Lee? I will share with people. Bruce Lee actually had one leg shorter than the other, and he was short-sighted. And for those people who know who he is probably one of the best martial artists in history, or most well-known. Yes, he chose a Wing Chun because it was for close-in fighting, because he was short-sighted. He wore glasses. So he adapted his activity, more than activity for him, of course, it was a way of life, but into his life, he chose what worked for him. So if you do an activity you can't do, pick something. So the Wonder Technique brings together a lot of stuff, but I'm hoping that people can just take it themselves and run with it in their old lives. And I would like literally everybody on the planet to have the Wonder Technique in their pocket. That's my goal, in simple terms.
Well, I mean, technically we do. You know, you don't need any specialized equipment, your memberships. You're born with the ability to practice this just by being human. So being aware of what the techniques are and why we should do them and why we should habituate them is the key here, I think.
Yes. Yeah, that's probably the most important thing that came out of the seminars that I've done over the years, because I've had nurses in attendance and say, I never knew water was so important, because I would explain how water functions in your body. just to almost convince people as to why they needed to drink water. Mm-hmm. And then to make the habit. So make it available, make it portable, carry it with you, and it'll become a habit. And once it becomes a habit, it's like I start to go, I'm going out the door and I don't have my water bottle. It becomes ingrained.
I walk around with this red water bottle. I put little kitty cat stickers all over it so it doesn't get confused with other people's water bottles.
Good idea.
And I love it. I just take it everywhere.
It's brilliant. I mean, everything I can take the wonder technique, and you can find it in your own life what you need to do, how to, you know, the exercise, pick something you love to do. When it comes to foods, I mean, you can get as simple as saying, you know, eat stuff that's in season, that's as local, is a very good choice. Eat food that's as fresh as possible and as close to its natural origin as possible. So orange juice is not the same as eating an orange. Right. That's very simple. People can recognize that. Mm-hmm. And so you can put it down to that. Then you can get really deep on, you know, the impact of omega-3, omega-9, omega-6, and so forth. But on a simple level, it can just really get down to core ideas and how you look at the world as well, as we talked a little bit on our kind of pre-chat about the importance of our state of mind, how we focus on things, how we experience things. I think this is really important.
Yeah, it's just, in a lot of cases, it's just a simple mindset shift.
Yes.
From, like you were talking about with the water, instead of getting angry and just being really pissed off that you didn't have water,
yes,
you calmly, in a way, took it in stride and said, okay, now I have to be a detective and figure out why. What's the problem here?
Yes.
And then you go about fixing it. Whereas if you had used the old paradigm and freaked out and been really pissed and angry, it would impede the process of actually finding a solution.
Yes.
You know, and I talk to students all the time, because I am an English teacher also, who let anger or their preconceived notion about what somebody else's thought is get in the way of them understanding really what's going on. And so I feel like I have these kinds of conversations with students quite regularly. They don't, you know, they know I'm a trusted person. For a lot of kids, I'm like school mom, you know. Yeah. So they come to me at a fight with my dad, and all we do is yell at each other, and he doesn't understand what I mean, and it just escalates, and then doors get slammed, and I'm like, all right, so you need to actually have a calm conversation with him and figure out what actually is going on here. You know, and so I give them techniques, but a lot of it is a mindset shift. You know, a parent misinterprets what the kid's response, and maybe what the kid said that was disrespectful was a stress response and not an actual, you know, misbehavior kind of thing. And so the parent being punitive would escalate the stress response so that the kid would shut down. You know, like, there's a bazillion ways we could apply this.
Yes. And actually, this is really important. As you mentioned, it's amazing, because when I look at my own children, how wise they can be, because, like, even when you think of neurologically, referring back to a little bit about the neurons in the painting that you have behind you, that we forget sometimes as parents, and I will say that as a parent, and I'm not speaking for all parents, but I sometimes forget as a parent, let's quote it that way, that my children are young, they're below 25 years of age. And when you're 25 years of age is when you reach integration of most of your brain. So if you imagine when somebody is prior to that age and they're making decisions, and sometimes they'll blurt out and say something to me, I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. And if I go after that, there's no point in going after that. It's because, hang on, I probably said the same thing when I was a teenager. And also, I need to kind of let it fall and see, well, is there more coming after that? And I say that sometimes the wrong things come out of my mouth too. Right? I mean,
we all do that.
Taking so we have
ownership
to
ownership and responsibility of that, and then mitigating the damage and
exactly
really rephrasing what we actually meant is important.
Exactly.
We have to mirror that for our kids.
Yes. And we have to give everybody around us the opportunity to respond in whatever way they need to. For example, back to my children, that, hang on, okay, let's see, where does that go? Because if I immediately go after that point or that action, it might have been just a mistake. Like, you know what? Right. One of my sons will come to me, Dad, you left the light on again in that room. And it's because I just, my mind was elsewhere and I left it on. And I went, you're right. Sure. I go back and turn it off. As again saying, oh, you're criticizing me because I didn't do that. No, that's all. That's mumbo jumbo in my brain. It's true. I left the light on. Just go turn it off. And thanks for letting me know. Right. So we do things and it depends on how we respond. Now, this is all to say in full disclosure to everybody listening, I was not always that way. I used to react. And now I've really taken the time to respond, work and look at and respond, like look at myself and my behavior. And the good news is for those listening is that you get to look at things over time and build better habits. Also to kind of smile and giggle at how you responded. But also you need to prepare. Like we mentioned a little bit about the water here, but people listening, they might think we're talking about drinking water. What happened was that the water went out in my home. And this has happened a few times in the French Village. And I will go to the city hall and they'll say, oh yeah, they're doing a renovation in some of the piping. Okay. And it'll be off for a few hours. Well, I went there today. Nope. Wasn't the reason. So then I phoned what's called a Metropole, the water system. And they said, nope, nothing's going on there. And I'm like, well, I got zero water. What's going on? Right. So I thought this could go on for a while if I don't address it. And then I phoned a neighbor whose number I happened to have to ask, did they have water? And they said, well, I'm actually working on my water system. And I said, I think my water system, and it turned out, is connected to theirs. Now, that's an unusual thing to have happen, but they have the shut off that controls the water in my home. And they didn't know. So the preparation was, is that I actually have some water that I store in case of emergency so I could manage. But I didn't have water for 7 hours. But I didn't get all angry and upset at the neighbor, nor at the situation. I just dealt with it, found out what the problem was, then knew, well, it'll be resolved in the period of the day. And I have some water to back up things. So it's all right. So preparation helps. We talked about that before the last podcast about the French, Irish phrase, be olive, which means be prepared. And it's an idea that, you know, prepare for things. So when we went through all the challenges, especially in France, when we had a major lockdown and a pandemic, having some extra food put aside that you can have for yourself and share with neighbors in need is really important. And now in Europe, I'm experiencing that there's a real lack of access to some foods is starting, and also in terms of access to, shall we say, fossil fuels. Yeah. We're not going to run out of the sun in the sky, but we don't have a lot of solar power in France. So the fuel has gone up. So it's a good idea to make sure that if you're planning a trip, to make sure that you buy fuel, because I remember back in the early 1970s when there was a fuel crisis.
Shortage in the lines.
Yeah. I remember that. I went to pump up the tires on my bicycle and I was like, why are all these cars all over the place? And it was because it was a few, I wasn't driving at that time. I was like, oh my gosh.
I remember waiting on the line with my dad in his car and it was, today's not our day to get gas. Today is our day to get gas, you know?
Yeah. So that's preparation and also being gentle with yourself. Like, and that comes from practice. And I think we build on it. It's a snowball effect. It's the same as saving money, like building relationships. It's over time we build relationships. It's not just in one experience. So in our own minds, Marcia, I believe that it has really helped me to work on myself, to build on things over time. And then at the same time, as you mentioned with the students in the school, to recognize that anybody else I'm interacting with, I don't know how bad their day is.
Right.
You just never know. You don't know what's happened to them.
You never know. And there could be a million reasons why a kid comes in whatever kind of mood he or she comes in. And unless you ask and listen without judgment, and have a rapport enough where they're willing to tell you, you don't know. So you can't make a judgment or what's the word I'm looking for? You can't make an assumption about how anybody is feeling or how ready they are for a particular learning experience or a particular interaction. It's pays to be self-regulated so that you can then have a relationship with other people and have the dialogue.
Yes, exactly. And I know that when it comes to, I mean, I'm no expert on parenting. I'm a parent, but I'm no expert on it. But managing, not even word managing is not the right word, but having a happy life with your children don't work on that from when they're teenagers. You got to start on that when they're really young. It's a continuation. It's not a separation. because if you wait till then to start building relationship with your children, it may be too late in a sense, because they get so much going on their plate now, you know, my children, where it's like they're busy in their own lives, they're moving out, they're doing things, moving around, pardon me, and, you know, spending time with their friends. They don't have as much time with me. So if whatever relationship I had prior to that, and that's what you mentioned here, if you've got a relationship with the student, they will open up to you. And that'll be, I've learned some hard lessons in my own life that if I haven't learned how to build relationship over time with people, then when there's a challenge, you don't have any sort of foundation to work with, which is
sad. And you lose the availability of that person or that relationship as a source of joy or a source of advice or support or any of that. And that's really the reason that human beings evolved to need a community.
Yes.
You know, none of us can survive on our own indefinitely.
Yes.
And I am grateful for the relationship that I have been able to build with my kids over time, because now my youngest is 21 and graduating college in 2 days. And, you know, and they're all embarking on adult lives of their own. And I get to be a part of the joy of that and their successes and they're striving for new things, but I'm also the place where they go with questions. You know, how do I handle this? Is this a good rental agreement to sign? What do we think about this job? You know, whatever the decisions are or the thought processes are that they're making in their lives, they include me. And
wow.
I love that. I don't for a second take that for granted. You know?
Yes. That's wonderful. And your words there, not taking it for granted, shows that you've taken the time to nourish that. And it's all over time. Mm-hmm. And also when it comes to any sort of relationship, I've learned as well too. And when I talk with people, I learn from their lives too, to never give up. I mean, at a certain point, sometimes relationships are over and that's okay. But like, you know, it could be a relationship with somebody, a romantic relationship or so forth. But with your children, sometimes they need to go a certain way. And then in time, they will come back. And it's the loving embrace that you keep sending them, that you're there, you're available. You know what? Maybe we don't get along right now. But always take the position of doing your best to understand, although sometimes life is just so difficult to understand. And I always remember my mom used to tell me when I was younger, life's not meant to be easy, David. And I was like, yeah, you're right. No, life is supposed to be easy. But now I realize, no, there is challenges. And sometimes there's decisions that one has to make that sometimes are impossible to make. It feels like you don't know what to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. There are a lot of difficulties and things, bad things happen.
Yeah.
And there isn't a rhyme or reason sometimes, and asking why gets you nowhere but in a circle by yourself.
Yeah.
And you just have to, I mean, I hate to say the word just because it implies that things are easy, but you get to a point where you have to accept what is and control your response to it.
Exactly.
And that's kind of it, you know, and kind of just pray that it works out in a favorable way for as many people as possible.
Yes. And it involves taking risk and sharing from myself in the sense that you have to get outside your comfort zone. And now when I've talked to a lot of people because of going through the pandemic, some people, you know, for me, it's easy for me to be on my own and quite introverted in that way. Mm-hmm. But I love meeting people and I have great joy in connecting with people. And when people say to me that, you know, what do I do now? Friendships, people that I've known, people have moved and everything during the pandemic. Now I feel isolated. How can I reconnect? And I think one of the greatest tools that we have right now is to decide to take a small portion of your time, because let's assume people just have a small portion, and volunteer.
Yeah.
Volunteer in an activity that you enjoy and that you feel will be of benefit to other people. And my latest example for myself is when I moved to France, I didn't speak a word of French. And as a native English speaker, it was enormously difficult for me to live in an environment where I couldn't understand nothing. And the situation, without explaining the whole history as to why I would end up in France with my children, but just the whole story was is that coming here and then not speaking the language was very, very stressful. And now I can speak the language, so I know how much easier it is when I'm talking to the tax office, or like today, the water gets cut off. I can phone the Metropole, I can phone the water service and ask them what's going on. If I could not do that, I would still have an amazing amount of stress. So I actually called.
Barriers to communication, literally. Yeah.
Huge, huge. And so what I did is I went to one of the local libraries. They call it a media tech because they have more than just books in there. And I volunteered, and I'll start in September, to do for people who want to learn English from somebody who's Anglophone but also speaks French. That's outside of my comfort zone. But the idea is that people that will show up will be people who, at least the librarian told me, people that are French who want to be able to communicate more with English-speaking people. Now, bear in mind, I'm the only English-speaking person in my village, so really? I'm going to another location. Yes, I'm only a native speaker. So I'm going to an area where there's a few more people that speak English, so I can help them bridge the gap between English and French. I have the capacity to do that. That's and nourish the conversation. And there's plenty of French people that actually have a good understanding of English, but they don't have the confidence to speak. Mm-hmm. That helps unify. If a French person can speak some English and an English person can speak some French, you can build bridges to communications, mm-hmm. to relationships, and to avoid misunderstandings. So yeah. Like the neighbor who shut off my water today, he's French, he's not English. So I had to communicate with a friend. What if I couldn't speak the language? Like it would have been like crazy zone to try and do it.
You've been playing charades.
Yeah, exactly. And so.
Pictionary, you know.
Exactly. I had done that when I first came to France to explain about a problem with a car. I could draw the car parts, but they were like, what is this guy drawing for? But the whole idea is that I remember how stressful that experience was. And my idea is to relieve the stress from other people. So, and that's going to be outside my comfort zone. I ain't never done that before. But I figured if it's going to help, I'm going to grow from it. I will meet new people. And that's the thing, the only reason why I mentioned volunteering and not suggesting people do what I'm doing. But when you volunteer, like another friend of mine volunteers at what we would call like a food service for people who don't have enough food, who are food insecure, and meets hundreds and hundreds of people mm-hmm. All the time. And that's very nourishing. It also puts things in perspective, but you're also giving of your time. And when you're working with other people, other volunteers, you make new friendships. And they're like-minded people. Like, what a better, I mean, I can go hiking because I love hiking and I meet people who like hiking. So you can make new friendships that way. But other ways you can do great social good when you volunteer yourself to help out. Now, there's only always a limit because there's a certain point where you have to work to actually be compensated financially for your time. But when there's no barrier, like the library couldn't pay me for my time. I didn't ask to be paid for my time, but it's a way of helping out. So all of that, to be precise, is that for people that are moving through loss of friendships or feeling a little bit out of center after the pandemic, a great idea would be just explore volunteering.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I know many years ago, my mom, I don't know how to tell the story without, my mother suffered from bipolarity and was an undiagnosed and self-medicated. And eventually that led to opiate addiction, which killed her. But before we got to how bad that all was, there was a long period of time where she was lonely and she didn't necessarily have to get a job because finances weren't a problem, but she needed to meet people and was shy and didn't know how to go about doing it. And she wasn't really a joiner to go join a community group of some sort, but she loved kids. So my suggestion for her was to go volunteer at a local preschool or a local daycare to read stories to little kids. Or yes. Go help them on the playground or whatever. And she would meet the other teachers or other grown-ups in the school and spend her day surrounded by the energy and exuberance and joy of small kids. And I wish that she had taken me up on that suggestion, but she couldn't let herself somehow. Mm. It's sad, but I think that could have really helped her outlook and the level of hope that she had for her life and made her feel more connected. So, you know, I mean, anything like you're saying, any sort of volunteer work where it puts you out in the community, bringing meaning to your own life and others is always a good choice.
It is. And actually, one of the things that, and I feel for the situation that you mentioned about your mom, and you, I believe you were giving a very good suggestion, because I can reflect that in another friend of mine who's going through some difficulty in a personal relationship, decided to go out and volunteer. Mm-hmm. And by volunteering, they found, hey, I actually do have value as a person, because in the relationship, they didn't feel like they had any value. Mm-hmm. And by separating yourself from that and meeting other people, you kind of get a whole new perspective on who you are. And it can also help you get perspective on, okay, what things do I need to change within myself, potentially? And what things do I need to nourish?
You might also discover that you have some innate talents in things, exactly, or skills that things can then be applied to other parts of your life.
Exactly.
You know, whether it's improving relationships or getting a different job that brings you more joy or money or success, yes, or satisfaction or something. Like, yes. Maybe you're undercutting yourself in certain areas, and volunteering or trying something new shows you a whole new perspective on yourself and allows you to do something else.
Exactly. And actually, those things that we do outside of our home, outside of our relationships, actually really do help. And I'm sharing this because I've heard so much from other people saying they nourish the relationships that we have. We need time away, yeah, to make us glow more. And also for our, that's not only for people that we're in relationship with, like, you know, romantic relationship, spouse and so forth, but also for our children. It's important for our children to see that we do other things, that we have other interests. They go, because maybe we might inspire them on the same thing, or maybe we'll just inspire them and say, hey, you know what? Dad's always talked, or mom's always talked about doing this, and they're actually doing it.
Exactly. Lead by example. Show them what's possible.
Yes.
It was,
yes,
like, there's a quote that I'm going to butcher. Oh my God, I'm going to butcher it. Something like, the greatest tragedy for a child is the unlived life of a parent.
Oh, wow.
So not doing the things that you should do to take care of yourself, not learning how to self-regulate, not learning how to do self-care, not taking the time to dig deep and figure out who you are and what your values are, and then living within those values, you know, walking the talk, so to speak. Not doing those things teaches your kids not to do those things. And if you have empty words that say, you know, to your kids that they should do X, Y, and Z, and you're not doing that yourself, they're going to go, what the hell does she know? You know? And I think that regardless of the actual specifics of the tasks that you're doing, like you said, just the sheer fact that you're doing them makes you a role model for your kids. You know, them seeing me get my heart broken while I was dating. Yeah. Okay. Who wants to do that? But it teaches them resilience.
Yes.
You know, maybe they don't make the same mistakes, or maybe they do, but go, this happened to mom and she cried and felt her feelings and then went past it. You know,
yes,
mom's held down 3 jobs and worked and gone back to school and, you know, still took us to scouts and baseball, and we can do that too. You know, like, look at the things that people can do when they're motivated and when they tap into their strength and their resilience. So
great examples. Yes. Wow.
You know, And I've heard that from my kids, because at the time when I was going through all of that crap, and I'm like, this really sucks because I'm not there for them the way I should be. Like, I was really mad at myself. And now that they're young adults, I hear that they've learned from those lessons, from seeing me go through things, and it's helped them make better, healthier, or at least more self-aware decisions in their own lives, which, what more could a parent want?
Exactly. Exactly. And I remember hearing years ago, the job of a parent is to actually let the children level up, go to a higher level, never to hold them back. So if they can, you know, avoid some mistakes, like I always say to my children, don't move to another country when you don't know the language. Like, I mean, some people say, well, you got to let them learn for, no. Some things you just don't want. Like, it's like saying,
move to another state or another country without a job either.
Yeah. I mean, I did the boat at the same time. So, I mean, so you like, yeah,
at least a work visa, you know, like, let's do something.
I was able to live here legally. That's great. But beyond that, yeah, it was like, oh my gosh, why didn't I think of those details when I moved for something, you know, for somebody who was really ill? It was important, but I needed to think about the other stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'm willing to say to my children, you know, be aware, don't do those things. And then learn, exactly. Can you learn from any mistakes I'm doing? And if you see glaring mistakes, please point them out so then I can figure out too, because I'm still a work in progress. But yeah, it's wonderful what you said, like when your children come around, people will be surprised, because really children of all ages, right from the day they're born, they're observing everything you do. Yep. They're hearing everything you do. And if you think that they're not listening, even if they, you know, they're in the other part of the room.
Mistaken.
Oh yeah. You're
even
you're
if just, they tell you they're ignoring you, they're not.
Exactly. Yeah. They're everything. And so if you think that they have an unusual habit and you don't like the habit that they have because it's hurting them, look closely. Are you doing the same habit, or are you doing a similar version of the habit? Like, you know, if you, as an adult, if I'm to say to myself, well, I can't change that about myself, X habit. If you're saying that, you're teaching your children that you cannot change something. Mm-hmm. And they're impressionable. Maybe they'll just say, forget it. I'm going to change that. I don't care, which is great. Or you might actually embed in their brain, which is possible, that they may think
they're mutable and they have no power over them.
Exactly. And you don't want to do that. So I do my very best. I'm like watching myself to make sure that I'm not doing those things with my children as much as I can without being too hard on myself, which is really important, but being as aware as I can. So I will gently reassess, and I don't want anybody listening to think that, oh my God, David must be obsessive about things. No, I'm not. But I've learned to observe, and I take time, and it's always a balance for me. It's people talk about yin and yang. It's like day is busy and a day is quiet, and a day is busy, and you know, there's moments in time like gaps in the music. It's and things that are important, I make habits, whether it's movement, whether it's time with family, whether it's time to talk with friends. Another great habit, I literally had to make it a habit of my own awareness, was taking the time each day to call a friend. Call, not text. Actually reach out and see how they're doing. And if they're not available, just leave a message.
Yeah, to keep that connection. That's always on my to-do list. Yeah. I literally put it on my calendar to call a certain person at a certain time when I think I might have some free few minutes.
Yeah.
And I would say 8 times out of 10, I look at that reminder and I quiet the reminder and I don't do it.
Mm.
Even though I know I really want to,
yeah,
I don't. And I haven't figured out exactly why. That's something I'm working on.
Okay. We all have our things, and I'm not perfect on it either.
No,
but it's like,
we all have our things.
Yeah.
We have to forgive ourselves for being human, forgive exactly. ourselves for making mistakes, for sometimes making unhealthy or unwise choices and learning from that.
Exactly. And I don't think we talked in the recording about the Serenity Prayer, right? We didn't. We talked before. For those people listening, you might have heard the phrase, the Serenity Prayer, and there's different versions of it. And I think it was Dr. Niebuhr, a gentleman who wrote it originally. Now, for some people, they may not like
it. Part of a lot of the 12-step programs.
Yes, it is. Exactly. And I mean, and there's great value in the concept of the 12-step program, or the first step that somebody is doing if they have a challenge in their life is to accept that it actually exists. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, believe that's the first step. But the Serenity Prayer that I remember in my brain is, God, give me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Yeah,
that is a lot of power in there. You can eliminate the God for some people. There's too much stuff going on. But it's the whole idea of recognizing, you know, what is it that I can change in my life? Mm-hmm. What is it that I can't change in my life? And then being wise enough to know the difference between them. I know I can change my behavior. So, and I can't change the behavior of other people. That's a start.
Right.
Now, if I have a financial crisis, or if I don't have work, or I have a problem relationship, I can take steps, step by step, baby steps, to work on fixing that, because it will have a snowballing effect, no matter what age you're at. Like, people run into financial struggles, and I have had times in my life that that's existed. But once I was moving in the right direction and not self-sabotaging, things worked out.
Yeah.
So never to give up, because it's always possible. And I believe, like, when the world is constantly moving towards creating peace, we're moving away from war. And at this moment in time, we live in a world where there is war still going on, and just happening. But we need to move in one direction by our actions.
Absolutely. Moving away from something is also moving towards something.
Exactly.
And we get to choose what we move towards.
Yes. And there's a great phrase that I think it was Marianne Williamson said, maybe she got it from somebody else. Love is letting go of fear.
Yeah.
And it's
profound.
It's very, very profound, because when we have fear about anything, we kind of suffocate ourselves. Mm-hmm. But when we have a much more openness to possibility, to love, we move forward. Whether it's, you know, maybe someone's listening here and thinking, geez, you know, that person that I know, I see all the time, I want to ask them out on a date. The fear is of rejection. But you know what? I've been rejected many times in my life. So I just say, okay, whatever.
Right.
If, you know,
I don't have a problem.
I'll just ask.
I don't have a problem with rejection. I don't have a problem with failure. The only thing I have a problem with is not doing something I think I want to try.
Yeah.
To me, the what if isn't what happened. What if it works out in disaster? For me, it's what if I didn't do it and I regret it?
Yes.
So I just go for it. And if I figure it out along the way, then great. And if it doesn't work out, I'll do something else. You know,
Wonderful.
No harm, no foul. You know,
exactly. It's very courageous. And that's part of the whole process too, is the courage to do this.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
So let's talk more about forgiveness. Forgiveness of other people, forgiveness of ourselves. How do we do that? I mean, I have my own techniques, but I would like to hear what you do or what you recommend.
Oh, wow.
Because so many of us beat ourselves up into an early grave, you know, like
we
don't let ourselves ever off the hook for being human and making mistakes or not being our best selves in a given moment. How do we learn how to extend that compassion inward?
Okay. I'm thinking. Because I've thought about a lot of this in my own life. There's one way that I deal with it, Marcy, which is something I've shared in a different context before, is that what if I don't forgive myself? What will be the consequences? And that applies in many different parts of our lives. So it's quite a universal tool, in a sense that if I make a mistake, let's say in a relationship, and I don't make forgiveness with myself for behavior that I've had or consequences that I'm responsible for, I can not forgive myself and never have another good relationship again in that context. Mm-hmm. If I want that to be the rest of my life, then I don't forgive myself. But if I forgive myself because I look into the future and say, if I want to have this happen in the future, I need to forgive myself.
Right.
It's an essential item. And if we don't learn how to forgive ourselves and let things go and learn from it, we will not forgive other people. We mirror it in our own behavior. So that's going to destroy the flower that you want to hold in your hand. So that would be this very simple answer to you. That's how we're looking at it. Yeah.
So then
it will hold you back.
What do you do to find forgiveness in somebody who has really hurt you or somebody you love and doesn't repent and doesn't feel like what they did was wrong, but you're so angry and consumed with?
I'm still angry and consumed, or they are still angry and consumed?
You are. Let's say you are. What do you do to release that? You know, like there's all this like Buddhist stuff about releasing the anger and letting it go and forgiving, because if you're perseverating over it, it's really only hurting you and hurting your life. It's not hurting the other person because they don't give a shit how you feel anyway.
Yes.
Which I get. And there are some moments where I feel elevated and hopeful. And I can overlook, you know, you did X, Y, and Z. It hurt me. I'm letting it go. Because I can't think about it anymore, because I can't give it any real estate bandwidth space in my brain. I'm done with that. And there are other moments where I'm still really freaking pissed off. And I guess maybe that's normal, the ebb and flow of that. As long as I don't let it take over, it's probably fine. What do you think?
I think what you just said, like as long as you don't let it take over, it is fine. And for me, I look at, I don't know exactly what's going on in someone else's mind, is what I will say to somebody. And I'll say this down. Do you really know? And we can guess, but we're only guessing. We'll never really know. So why somebody would have done something that really hurt me And I've had people do stuff that has hurt me, but I don't understand fully what happened because they've never totally explained it. So if I decide to be attached to that impossible to understand situation, it's only going to hold me back. And have a line of attachment, kind of like the Buddhist thing you mentioned, between me and them. And yet they're probably, meaning nothing to them, I mean everything to me. So what I will do sometimes, I have a phrase that I use, which is I say, throw love on the fire, meaning that in response, instead of throwing hatred or anger, I will just, you know, it's in a way of letting it go. Not to say that the person may have done something that, like, I mean, people have done some horrible things to people, but will I allow that experience to take over my life? Is it going to be healthy for me? Where am I going to go in my life if I'm always going to carry that anger? And I sense that in other people, where I will meet people and they're still angry, of something. Like, they cannot involve themselves in new relationships because they're still angry at people before.
It's holding grudges and wasting energy and time.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's really sad because part of them wants something new and refreshing in their life, but part of them is still attached to that. So as I kind of went back to before, I'm probably answering it with the same idea, and I'm no expert on this, is to how, if I don't forgive the other person or forgive myself and that attachment go, it's going to be damaging to me, and I'm probably going to take it out there and damage other people with it, or lose opportunities because we've talked
about weaponize that sort of thing.
Yes, because what happens if I'm by my own expression of myself teaching to those people around me that you can't forgive people, and I hear that, I'm always shocked when I hear people that in certain contexts they're super wise and very knowledgeable, and then they tell me about a personal relationship, a family member where I've decided I'll never speak to this person again for the rest of my life, and I'm like, really? That's okay. But really?
It's tough. I mean, I had to make that decision when my mother was suffering from opiate addiction. She became someone else. The addiction killed the woman who was my mother, and her addicted body was taking on a different personality. And in order to save myself and my kids, I had to separate.
Yeah.
But, you know, in recent years, I've learned some stuff about my dad, that his past behavior. And I was so enraged and so hurt, and, you know, things I just wanted to forget. I just want to unhear that. And I had a couple of weeks after a series of these very torturous, toxic, awful conversations with him, I had a couple of weeks where I was like, I don't know if I can continue a relationship with him. I don't know if I can find love and respect for him again. Like, this was so damaging.
Wow.
And I talked about it with my therapist. I wrote about it endlessly. I painted myself, you know, so my fingers were rainbows. And eventually, over time, I was able to put it into perspective. And this is all recent, like, you know, since February of 2020, you know, this is all really recent stuff. And I've been able to sort of get more compassionate about his life and why he made the choices and decisions that he made based on the available information he had at the time. And none of it was really directed towards me. Like, all of the things that I found incomprehensibly detestable weren't things that involved me at all. It was all stuff that he had done outside of his relationship with me. It was stuff that he in relationship with my mom, who he got divorced from in the 80s and earlier even. So none of it was necessary for him to even share with me in the first place. And so I started to really think about him as a person and where he came from and what his parents were like and what emotional intelligence tools he had about himself. And it made me see, gave me perspective. It made me see that he's just a human man, flawed like everyone else, trying to figure out how to bring joy into his own life and mitigate his pain. And I can't really fault him for making decisions that I wouldn't make because we're different people who come at it from different perspectives with different tools and talents and so on. And ultimately, I was able to let it go because it doesn't have anything to do with our present relationship. And it took me a couple of months. You know, the pandemic was sort of good, well-timed for this because this conversation was in February of 2020. And then by March of 2020, we were all separated anyway. So I had the whole pandemic of being separated from him to give myself time to readjust my thinking.
Yes.
So that when we were able to get back together, and now we're fine. Our relationship's totally okay, you know? And it doesn't Wonderful. Really get in the way anymore. But it was a lot of mental gymnastics to allow myself the perspective and the patience and the peace and the quiet to listen inward and really think about relentless kindness and compassion. How to put all of this into place, you know, how to make sense out of it.
That was very courageous, Marcy, and not easy. And I have to honor you for that because it is a huge thing to do. And not everybody will do the work.
No.
But it takes great courage to do it. And I want to make it clear that when I say to people that I'm surprised, but when I said, you know, people say they won't talk to a person again, but one of the important things that you did is that you left the opportunity for something to arrive again, the relationship to return. And time, you know, the old saying, time does heal, because when we, but the time with this space in between mm-hmm. helps give us this perspective as well. I mean, really, if people are in bad relationships, and there's multiple situations we have, they need to be outside that space. You can't keep on putting yourself into a toxic situation, no. a situation that you're just not comfortable with. And
it's hard to make a healthy decision from within inside that.
Exactly. You know? And this is something that, when you can kind of gauge it, because when you're in a conversation with somebody and you that you spend time with, and after you spend time with them, you feel energized and you feel good. Mm-hmm. That gives you a feeling that's a good relationship. But if every time you meet somebody and you feel drained and exhausted afterwards,
that's not good.
So it's that experience you can use as kind of like a metering system to go, okay, I need to spend less time with that person until I understand what's going on here. And it could be because, for example, I had somebody tell me recently, and it was really interesting, and it goes back to the parenting thing, where they found that they'd gone off their path. They'd changed their values because of the relationship they were in. And they'd lost their center. And now they're back on track. They're following their values. And they feel so good. And the world has changed around them. And I said to them, bravo. I said, that's so cool.
Exactly. Right?
I love hearing these stories. But they had to do work.
Yeah, this shit does not happen on its own.
No. Yeah, you can give time. You can give space to people. But like, if you give space, but you don't work on it, whether it's even just seeing it's possible that, you know, things can be resolved. Next time you meet them, you're probably just going to be at each other again. Like, I don't believe you can do it without, I mean, time will help, space will help, but there is some work that needs to be done. At least if it's an openness to have a conversation with them again. And I know that somebody else once asked me for advice, said, you know what, I haven't talked to this person in weeks. How shall I start a conversation with them? Just let them talk is what I said.
Yeah. You can say, we haven't spoken in weeks and I don't know where to begin right now.
Yeah.
How do we restart this?
Yeah.
Ask the question to the person, not a third person. You don't have to rehearse it.
Exactly.
Just go in there and be authentic.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell to do now. Yesterday I was really pissed at you and I don't want to be pissed anymore. How do we move forward?
Yeah. And to understand why things happen, because I find it very interesting that there's one friend of mine that, it makes me smile. They told me that, we all hang out as a group. And she told me that, oh, I always spend all the time I spend, you know, with my friends, and I balance that out. And the next time I'm in a relationship, I'll make sure I spend time with all my friends. Now she's in a new relationship. She's vanished. And I'm like, unreachable person.
Right.
But I'm like, that's okay. That's where they're at right now. So right. like we don't always know what we're doing when we're in the experience.
It could just be the honeymoon phase of a new relationship and then things balance out again.
Yeah, yeah. So wonderful person that she is, but I just thought that makes me smile because she said, oh, I'll never do that, but she actually did it. But we all do things like that. And there's where we have to go, oh, okay. So, and I'm pretty sure that the next time that I see her, because she's really unavailable now, she's like so busy that she'll probably go, yeah, okay, yeah, you're right. Wasn't really around, but that's okay. You know, right. She's, yeah, it's great. I mean, and that's, I don't know the full details, you know. I mean, I'll reach out.
If you needed her and you called her, she'd be there.
Yeah. And I would, I mean, I will send a message to say, I'm thinking about you so they know that you're still around.
Right.
But if they're busy doing whatever they're doing in their new relationship, and that's great. But that's is another level. Instead of saying, how come I could choose to say, why are they neglecting me? How come they're not calling me? No, it doesn't matter. It's not about
I've had
all
people
that stuff
in my life keep score. Well, I called you last time, so it's up to you to call me this time.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Who the freaking hell has time for that?
Yeah.
If you're thinking about someone, contact them. If you're not, then don't. But this keeping score stuff, really?
Yeah, actually, that's a huge thing. I remember hearing Tony Robbins actually said that if you're an accountant in a relationship, you'll destroy all the relationships that you have.
Right.
And that's an accountant where I did this for you once. You should do it now. And it's like, but that's running in your head. You're not going to say it to them, but you get angry because they don't do what you do. But you know what? When you do what you do because you love to do it, that's great. But if you're doing it with the expectation of someone else doing it,
that's not right.
No. And actually, for a completely different person to Tony Robbins, Warren Buffett, I remember Warren Buffett once said, he said, have very high expectations of yourself and very low expectations of other people.
Yeah.
Then you'll be happy because you can control what's going on with you. And I just thought, that's so simple, but that's beautiful.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. And then you get to be surprised by other people's kindness.
Yes.
Because you're not expecting it.
Exactly. Actually, and I can give you an example of that without too much detail. One friend called me and they, out of the blue, like it was a phone call. We talk regularly, but out of the blue, they called me and it was like, they explained to me that they'd done something that they felt it was incorrect. When we were talking before, because we were talking about something and they said, I've never done that. And I just, you know, it's just a part of the conversation, but they actually called me back a week later to say, no, actually I have done that. And I should have told you the truth. And I have no idea why I didn't do it, tell you that.
Wow.
And I was like, okay. And I thought, but I was like super impressed that they called me to say
sure.
that. I had no expectation, no nothing. It was not attached to me. I had no idea of the information, but once you don't like hold it against the person, say, okay, that's their choice. They did that. That's fine. And in fact, it's okay. And in fact, when they came back to me and said that they'd done something, it was simply put, it was to do with copyright. And I said, I thought, wow, that took great courage for you to call me back. And I really appreciate that you trust me enough to share that. You feel comfortable enough to be in that space, which is what you, Marcy, have talked about with your students, which is wonderful, and with your children, when you develop that space where they feel comfortable enough to share with you. So all of what we've talked about in this chat, conversation, whatever way we want to frame it, in terms of outside of the wonder technique, which is really core principles, is the idea of just letting life be, doing the best that we can, accepting ourselves, and letting people be around us the way they are.
It's a lot of freedom and peace to be found in that.
Oh, yeah. It really is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so I normally conclude each interview with 7 quick questions. But since you're a repeat guest, I came up with new questions for you.
Wonderful. Let's do this.
Okay. What is one of the things that you pray that you have imparted to your kids?
Honesty.
Excellent. That's everything.
Yeah, because as I just mentioned there, if something comes out of my mouth, like where, and that's not true, I'll say, no, that's not true. This is what happened. Like sometimes we embellish things. Like,
sure.
You know, the fish was this size, not this size. Like, so it's to be honest. And even when it's uncomfortable.
Yeah. I heard... On another podcast, the author Elizabeth Gilbert said, let's hope I don't mess this up. She said that that, what did she say? Oh my God, it's falling out of my head now. That every truth you tell is a kindness, even if it makes people uncomfortable. And every lie you tell is an unkindness, even if it makes people comfortable.
Wow.
And I thought that was so profound.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, you're going to get to that truth at some point anyway. So why go through all of the uncomfortable? Why stretch it out? You know, like I grew up being a peacemaker in my dysfunctional family, and I wasn't honest because dishonesty kept the status quo and made me feel safe. You know, like I didn't tell people how I feel, and I didn't pay attention to my own needs because I was always trying to mitigate somebody else's mood. And ultimately, telling somebody the truth in the moment, even if it is awkward and uncomfortable, ultimately is more kind to everyone involved and gets you to understanding and equilibrium and peace faster.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay. For what do you want to be remembered?
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is that I did my best to be the best dad I could be to my children. It all comes down to that.
Yeah. What is your favorite movie?
Oh my gosh. Okay. One of the most recent movies that I've seen multiple, it's not that recent, but I really enjoyed was Interstellar. It's just a few years old.
That was good.
It was a great movie. And what I really appreciated about it was that when they did Gargantuan, the black hole was they actually used real scientific data to generate that image. And there's a lot of consistent physics in the actual movie. And part of the movie is incomprehensible. And I like movies that are hard. Like Inception was really good, where I was like, where I had to kind of get around it. And another movie that I saw recently on that same line was, it will come to me. Tenet, one of my sons really likes it, where there's reversal of time. But people can listen to this. I like things that make me think about the potential of experiences that I don't understand, which can help me grow in my understanding of who I am and those people around me. So thinking about impossible things. So that was a big answer to a small question, but I'm answering but my first response. So there's probably, Interstellar was the first one that popped up, which I like.
Cool. What was your favorite vacation?
Oh, this is when I took a trip and I went to a lot of different places, including in the Himalayas in northern Pakistan. I was close to the base camp. No, went to the base camp of Nanga Parbat, which was at 4,000 meters. And I went there from 3,000 meters to 4,000 meters on my own, crossing a glacier that was creaking and cracking and moving.
That's some scary shit, David.
Yeah. And Nanga Parbat is in the movie 7 Years in Tibet, where Brad Pitt goes to climb Nanga Parbat. So it was in that region. It's close to K2 in northern Pakistan, as against Everest being a different location. And that was part of a trip where I went to many different countries. But we spent a month in what's called the Northern Territories. It's north of Pakistan, which most people don't go to when they go to Himalayas. And it was spectacular. It was very remote. And I have a photograph of a sign that says Pasu, which was 160 kilometers from the Chinese border. So that's how high up we were.
Wow.
So yeah, I will never, this feels like it was yesterday and it was, you know, a dozen years ago, but I've got great memories of that holiday.
That sounds amazing. Name one simple, ordinary moment in your life that brings you joy.
Oh, wow. How can I say it's ordinary? It's great joy for me to have this conversation with you. Conversations like this, because we don't know each other that well, but conversations with my friends, no disrespect to you, but people who know me.
We've met twice.
So, these are the things that create great richness. The conversations I have with my children, my friends, you know, those things. These are the most fulfilling moments of my life. I always feel great.
Beautiful. Beautiful. What's your favorite book or a book that you might go back to and reread many times that changed your way of thinking?
Oh, unquestionably, one book that there's two books, but one book that I know I often share about is from by Cahil Gibran, The Prophet. And I just talked about it, actually, for those people listening. I was talking to a friend who was going through some challenges in a relationship. And Cahil Gibran, if I remember correctly, he does little vignettes of like a page and a half. And one is on children, one is on marriage, one is on food. And one of the ones he talks about in a relationship, that if you imagine that there's two pillars, two columns, and a roof above it. When the two columns are too close, the roof will fall. And this is a symbolism for a relationship. If people are too enmeshed beside each other all the time and there's no space, the relationship will kill itself. So I remember Cahil Gibran, many of his different phrases about the importance of that. I think when he talks about children, he talks about parenting where your job is to release the child into the world, to give them support and let them go. And so there's some beautiful phrases inside of that book.
What's the title?
The Prophet.
The Prophet, right.
Yeah, it's a tiny little book. It's really small, and you find it in multiple languages. And I think Cahil Gibran was from Libya, but it's, and you don't even need to know the name of the person, their history or anything, but it's a book full of really interesting things to think about. The approach to food, the approach to money, approach, like he's got all these little sections. And where I am right now, I know where my copy is. It's in the other room on the shelf. So I don't have it within hand's reach, but often it is throughout my day.
Interesting.
And so The Prophet. Yeah.
Awesome. I'm going to add that to the, I have a Permission to Heal podcast bookshop on a website called bookshop.org. And I've added all of my guests, the books that they have written and many of the books that they have recommended. And then purchases from the Permission to Heal Bookshop podcast at bookshop.org gets sourced from local independent bookshops rather than big, gigantic companies like Amazon. So it helps support local bookstores, which is great.
Awesome.
So I'm going to add that to the bookshop. Yeah. And then last question is, I don't know if you're a TV watcher.
These are great questions. No one's ever asked me these questions. So.
Oh, good. Yeah, TV shows are you binging or loving? We talked about movies a little bit, but.
Well, you got me there. I don't generally watch TV at all.
Okay.
I watch movies, but I don't.
Today who doesn't watch TV at all. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very rare.
Watch TV. I read so much when I was single. There was kid TV on when my kids were little.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like teenage TV, whatever they were watching. But I didn't watch anything. And since I got married, my husband has sort of encouraged me. We've been sharing shows together that
can
again,
be nice.
Make us think and so on. So it's,
yeah, I guess there's probably TV that would open up my mind to things. But no, there's no TV.
Okay.
I do have a TV that we watch movies on, but I don't watch any series or stuff like that. So, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. There you go.
That was beautiful. Great questions.
Thanks.
Yeah, I love that. That's a real interesting way to end, because last time I think we started with questions. So now we end.
Yeah, it was when I first started the podcast last year, I was a little nervous about how to get into conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Once I was in a conversation, I was fine, but I wasn't comfortable beginning. So I would start with the questions as a way of as a launch point. And now I do them at the end. Because it seems more organic to me.
And you make it so natural. It's like we're having a conversation. I've got to keep on kind of, David, we're on a podcast here. We're recording this. Like we're just having a conversation.
Having a conversation. This is
yeah,
what I love.
And it's wonderful. And I do hope that those people that are taking the time to listen to this as we share have found something of value in their life.
That is my
and
hope as well.
Ultimately, maybe it'll just be the enjoyment of a conversation.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much for coming back and spending another hour with me. This was so great, David.
My pleasure and my honor, Marcy. Thank you for sharing, as I like to say, you shared time with me, which is sharing a piece of your life.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me for this episode of Permission to Heal. I hope you found it moving and inspirational. Please remember, you don't need anyone else's permission to trust and follow your heart. You have the power within you. Subscribe to Permission to Heal so you don't miss any new episodes, and please share this with your friends.